We still don't have anybody for one of them, number 125, that we started out this morning. I'm just continuing to lay it over.
Think about it.
Okay.
I really don't know. This is the first time it's happened.
I mean, we might have questions.
My sense right now is that we probably ought to go ahead and set the title. Let me think about it a little bit.
They can always ask for a rehearing.
Good afternoon. Let's resume after our recess. The time is 1:18 p.m. and the next item on the board's agenda is number 126 concerning compensation for land use regs that diminish value. So if we could first hear from a representative from the proponents. If you'll identify yourself for the record and who you represent, please.
Mark Detsky, representing the proponents.
We may have some questions, but first, is there anything that you need to tell us about the measure?
Well, my opening comments were just to state that the single subject of the initiative is to create and implement a remedy in certain circumstances when government should compensate landowners for reductions in value of their property caused by government regulation. All of the provisions that are included in the proposed initiative are congruous and connected to that as far as implementation and application of the initiative to certain circumstances. And then I'll take any of your questions.
Okay, thank you. I think we've seen previous versions, similar versions. For example, I think maybe the last one that I can recall was number 86. As I recall, they're pretty similar. Do you happen to know what the differences are?
Yes, the differences are in this measure, the proponents have sought to protect certain areas where the other initiative might otherwise impinge, and those have been listed as exceptions to the application of the rule. And so it has a similar effect to the other initiative, it's true, but it has different provisions.
Okay. 86 was approved.
And 86 was approved, single subject approved, we set titles, although it did look like there were a number of variations, but it was similar in general, as I recall. So, actually, one thing that appears to be similar is that I think for number 86, the board permitted a correction to the text that I think needs to be made to number 126 as well. And that is, let's see, it's on the second page. Let's see, we're under towards the bottom of the second page under this paragraph D that says as used in this subsection 2. And then the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6th line says taken in connection to an application. And when we looked at number 86, the proponents asked us to change that word to with so that it would refer to taken in connection with, as I recall. So if that is a technical correction that you would like approved by the board, we may be able to do that, but if you could let us know.
I think we'd consent to that.
Okay.
There's one other technical.
Okay.
On that same page, looks to be paragraph Roman numeral 4. On the center of the page, I think third line of that paragraph, the district where the real property is located, period, the owner's claim. I think there needs to be a space.
Consent to that as well.
I'll move then that the board approve those two technical corrections as requested by proponents.
Second.
If there's no other discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Are there questions for Mr. Detsky?
Can you,
Mr. Chairman,
go ahead. Can you walk through, I think I have general sense, but just for my benefit, the effect of paragraph 2B, and then just leading up to my question, I don't think that issue is included in the title, and then when we get to the title, I guess, as to whether you think that language or that reference needs to be included in the title itself.
Sure, sure. Well, what subsections A and B have to do with defining the criteria that will permit application of the initiative. And what subsection B does in particular is tries to create a set of what is termed commonly held community values. And by that we mean we are looking at situations wherein, although it may meet the qualifications of subsection A, subsection B runs into situations where there might be an overarching need to, from the local government's perspective, to protect those certain values that we enumerate in the paragraph B2.
And do you think that's referenced in the title?
Yes, I do think it's referenced in the title, but I think that in the case that we anticipated that might be a question you'd have, and so we had a suggestion for language.
Okay, we can get to that.
Okay.
Any other questions for Mr. Detsky? Let's then turn to the question of whether the measure complies with the single subject requirement. Any discussion by the board? It seems like the measure is substantially similar to number 86, and the board found a single subject there. I'm not aware of an issue regarding single subject. I don't have anybody else signed up to testify, by the way. Is there anybody else in the room who wishes to testify on this measure? Discussion by the board, or is there a motion?
I move that measure number 126 meets the single subject requirement, and that the title board has jurisdiction to set a title for the measure and proceed to set a title.
I'll second that. Any discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Then let's turn to the staff draft. And Ms. Gomez will display it on the screen in the room. My recollection is that this is very similar to the draft or the titles that the board set for number 86. Mr. Detsky, do you have any comment about the staff draft?
I think generally the proponents are happy with the staff draft, but to address the comments of Mr. Dunn, I think that it might be appropriate to line 4, from the end of line 3 to the beginning of line 4, after it says requiring public entities, and I think that I would add in there, in certain circumstances, as a means of qualifying the parts of 2B. And I think that's my only suggestion.
Okay. Requiring public entities in certain circumstances to provide just compensation.
Yes, correct.
Let me ask you about one thing. The reference to just compensation, my recollection was when the board considered number 86, there was some discussion about whether the word just should be there. The measure itself refers to just compensation, as I recall, as did number 86. But after some debate with respect to number 86, the board took the word just out. And as I recall, the reason for that was that there was no the first concern was just, the word just may be a catchword, or could be interpreted to be a catchword, which the board is not supposed to use. And second, it didn't seem like it really added anything to the concept that's being explained in that portion of the titles. It's still going to, it still would say, requiring public entities to provide compensation to an owner. Do you, would you have any objection to removing the word adjust?
Am I correct in that you're talking about, whereas just compensation in terms of how it would be defined in a legal sense was the catchphrase?
Yes, and I'm aware that the phrase is frequently used, right, in a legal and constitutional sense, and in the measure itself. But like I say, I'm partly guided by what the board did before, and thinking that we probably ought to be consistent. We don't have to be, but there may be reasons for varying. But if it would probably be my recommendation to remove the word just, if I'm recalling what we did on number 86 correctly, unless that's something that really causes some, if you feel, cause some problem for you.
Well, I think that having just compensation in there was part of the intent of proponents in talking about it in the constitutional sense. So, but on the other hand, I do see your point, especially if it's taken it in, with just as taken as a more ordinary meaning than the legal sense, and the catchphrase sense. So I think that if you decided to take it out, that
any other discussion about the titles or questions for Mr. Detsky relating to the staff draft?
The only comment to that I'd add is it might be easy even just to say requiring public entities to compensate an owner. Drop a couple letters. If we were inclined to drop the just.
Any reaction to that, Mr. Detsky?
And so now you're saying take out to provide? Say to compensate or to
right to requiring public entities to compensate an owner.
Compensate an owner. I think that'd be fine.
Any discussion or suggested changes? Any motions? I mean, Mr. Dunn, I think I could support just saying to compensate. Suggest that change.
I'll move that.
I'll second that. So then that would refer to requiring public entities to compensate an owner. Would strike the word to also. To compensate an owner or exempt the owner from land use regulations. That's Mr. Carton. That's been moved and seconded at this point. Any further discussion on that motion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Mr. Carton.
Mr. Chairman, this morning we had two measures before us that were substantially similar titles. And as you've pointed out, number 86, a title has been set for that, and this title for this measure will be substantially similar to that measure. And this morning you pointed out to avoid voter confusion, it's often a good idea to find out whether or not both of the measures are going to be circulated. Or to, I don't know if you wanted to walk through that on this measure as you did this morning.
Thank you. It's a good question. I don't know whether you had to follow that discussion. Here, the problem for the board is that we're prohibited from setting titles that are confusing, and one of the standards for confusion, if we have similar titles, there can be voter confusion. We've set titles for number 86, which is almost identical to the staff draft for number 126. The way we usually get around that potential problem is ask proponents if they can assure the board that only one version will be circulated. Now, I think there might be different proponents for number 86.
That's correct.
So this is a little different. Do you have any reason, is there some prospect, or can you give me any guidance as to whether or not both would be circulated?
I don't know what guidance I can give you, because I can only speak for the proponents who I represent. I think that the differences between the two are in the paragraphs that Mr. Dunn pointed out, so that's why I suggested that in certain circumstances language. And I think that this is a bit different than the first situation you were talking about, and it's certainly not our intention to we are not proponents of both, but we are addressing the same issue. To the extent that it's similar, it's not, we don't believe it's a question of confusion of the voter, because in that instance there would be two separate campaigns.
Well, let me, in an effort partly just to help myself think this through, let me read the title that we set for number 86 and compare it to the staff draft, if you will. Number 86 reads, an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning a requirement that public entities provide remedies to owners of privately owned real property or land use regulations that diminish the value of the property, comma, in connection therewith, requiring public entities to provide compensation to an owner or exempt the owner from the land use regulations if a public entity enacts or enforces land use regulations that reduce the value of any portion of the property by 20% or more. I didn't notice any real difference other than what we just did in line 4. I don't know whether anybody else noticed a difference. So I'm not sure. We have two different measures circulating with essentially identical titles. They're very similar measures. I don't know whether we have a problem or not. Yeah, Mr. Gessler? Please do. Yeah, if you'll introduce yourself to the record, please.
Mr. Hobbs, my name is Scott Gessler. I'm with the law firm Hackstaff Gessler. I represent the proponents of initiative number 86. And to directly answer your question earlier, we do plan on circulating that petition and seeking ballot access.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Detsky, I'm assuming that you're not withdrawing your measure either. Is that correct?
Oh, that's correct.
Mr. Kneiser, I'm just wondering if you have any guidance, or am I worried about this too much? Or
one point, Mr. Hobbs, would it help then in this one? I mean, normally I'm not so sure what he suggested wouldn't work, just saying in certain circumstances, but if we're trying to provide clarity between the two measures, spell out then with more clarity the provisions of 2B in this title.
If you're going to set the title, that would definitely be the way to go. The statute reads, ballot title shall be brief, shall not conflict with those selected for any petition previously filed for the same election. And so there's nothing in this statute that prohibits two petitions dealing with the same subject matter, but if we're going to set the title, I think we have to set it in a way that clearly distinguishes. So, in this case, I think, given the fact that they appear to be so similar in all respects except for, I believe it's paragraph, the addition of a new paragraph 2B, we ought to set out in some detail what that paragraph 2B is.
If I may, I could suggest language that might do that.
Okay.
And if I may approach that.
Sure. Uh-huh. Thank you.
You anticipated the question.
I did.
Thank you. Do you have extra copies for anybody else who may need one in the audience, or for Mr. Gessler?
Are there takers?
Yes.
And then perhaps if you can explain this and how it relates to your measure compared to number 86.
Of course. Well, I think that in this case we could You'll also see that I have the in certain circumstances language there, and I think that really one or the other would suffice. But the last line 7, 8, 9 in this version, and I'll read it for the record, unless said land use regulations serve to prevent the decrease in fair market value of any portion of surrounding real properties, protect commonly held community values, or protect the built or natural environment. What that does is step through 2B, which is the new paragraph that we've been discussing, and specifically decreasing the fair market value of any portion of surrounding real properties is 2B1, commonly held community values is 2B2, and the natural built environment is 2B3. So what we've done is add languages that address each of the sub-paragraphs in turn.
Thank you. I'll go ahead and move those changes in Mr. Detsky's draft just for discussion purposes.
Second.
Any discussion?
I have a question about sort of the practical implication, but if you want to just adopt this right now just for discussion purposes.
Well, up to you. If you'd rather go ahead.
Let me ask a question. I'm just trying to figure out what the impact of this is. So let me give you a hypothetical, and I don't want to get, I'm not going to the merits of the issue, but just so I understand it. If you have Farmer Brown who has his 20-acre parcel and there's development all around it, and they want to take that property through eminent domain, and the commonly held community value is small residential development, then he would not be entitled to, I guess he'd be entitled to normal compensation, but this provision wouldn't apply?
Just let me back up a little bit, because you said that it's a 20-acre parcel that wants to be taken by eminent domain, and I think that what this amendment is addressing is regulatory takings. So it's not so much a question of that as it would be a land use regulation that would affect a development. In this case, let's say it was development right next to his parcel, and that development was going to
be rezoned.
And then there's a land use regulation that would cause that neighbor to initiate a just compensation proceeding. And then this would say, I think at that point, this initiative would kick in under 2B1, that landowner, as a neighboring property, would be able to have standing.
With respect to the motion that's pending and the language that you provided, Mr. Detsky, I actually would like to propose inserting two commas, part of my motion. One would be before the or at the end. You've got a series of three things there, I think, unless, and then the first is to prevent the decrease in value, et cetera. The second is protect commonly held community values. I'd like to insert a comma there before the or. I know some people don't use a comma there in a series of three. I think our convention is that we usually do. So just to be consistent, I think I'd like to insert a comma after the second item in that series of three things, unless there's some objection. The other comma would be at the beginning of that clause, or that phrase before the word unless. Kind of like to set off the 20% or more with a comma. I think that's a real, as I recall, it's kind of a long statement, and then the unless relates to, you know, what precedes, and I just think there's a break there that might be helped by a comma there. Do you have any problem with that?
No, I can send those.
Is that okay with the members of the board?
That's fine.
So the motion before the board is to adopt these changes suggested by Mr. Detsky. essentially adding, inserting in line 4, in certain circumstances, and then adding an unless clause at the end of the titles. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Are there any other suggested changes to the staff draft?
That's one question. When Mr. Kneiser read the statute, it said the board may not set a title on a provision that conflicts with a previously set title. Is that the language?
Shall not conflict with those selected for any petition previously filed for the same election.
So if this conflicts with the previous one, we can't set a title?
Well, it's the title that cannot conflict. It says ballot title shall not conflict. The statute is actually very old. That portion of the statute has been around for a long time. But I think the intent was that you couldn't publish ballot titles that would confuse the voters in the sense that they would confuse one ballot title with another. So you wanted to set up the language so that the signers knew exactly which measure they were signing the petition for.
Rather than saying you just have two measures that do competing things,
right,
I guess.
Right. You can have two measures that are competing, dealing with the same subject matter. You just have to make sure that the titles adequately distinguish between or among those measures.
Eric?
Just to follow up on that, the single subject stated in 126, which single subject is concerning a requirement that public entities provide remedies to owners of a privately owned real property for land use regulations that diminish the value of the property. That single subject is identical to the single subject in 86, but the amendments that we've made to the language following that single subject, in your opinion, sufficiently set the two apart to avoid the conflict provision in that statute?
Right. I think without repeating the new language verbatim, my sense is that what's been suggested adequately distinguishes between the titles for the two measures.
Thank you.
Any other discussion concerning the staff draft? Not. Is there a motion to adopt the staff draft as amended? And I'll, if there's a motion, I'll read that into the record before we vote on it.
I'll move that.
Second.
Moved by Mr. Dunn, seconded by Mr. Carton. And the motion is that the titles set by the board would be as follows: an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning a requirement that public entities provide remedies to owners of privately owned real property for land use regulations that diminish the value of the property, comma, and comma, in connection therewith, comma, requiring public entities in certain circumstances to compensate an owner or exempt the owner from the land use regulations. If a public entity enacts land use regulations that reduce the value of any portion of the property by 20% or more, comma, unless said land use regulations serve to prevent the decrease in fair market value of any portion of surrounding real properties, comma, protect commonly held community values, comma, or protect the built or natural environment, period, with the understanding that the same changes would be made in the ballot title and submission clause that begins in line 7 on the version projected on the screen. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0, and that concludes action on number 126. For the record, is 1:46 p.m. Let's go to the next item on the board's agenda, which is number 128, payment of costs for new development. And Mr. Detsky, I think you are representing the proponents here as well. If you'll introduce yourself again for the record, please.
Thank you, members of the title board. Mark Detsky for the proponents.
Anything we need to know about before I turn to questions from the board members?
Yes, a similar introductory statement for this one. For Initiative 128, the single subject proponents is to enable local governments to collect reasonable fees for any public costs associated with new development within their jurisdiction. We believe that all of the, well, the text of it is one paragraph long, and so we believe that the single subject relates to the location and the direction of one paragraph of the initiative.
Any questions for Mr. Detsky? I don't think I have any, so let's turn to board consideration of whether the measure complies with the single subject requirement.
I'll move that proposed initiative 2005-2006-128 satisfies the single subject requirement.
Second. I do have one other person signed up to testify. Is that on the single subject question? Okay. So it's been moved and seconded that the measure complies. If there's no other discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Then let's turn to the staff drafts. Ms. Gomez will project them on the screen. And Mr. Dent, do you have a chance to look at the staff draft, and do you have any comments?
I have it. I do. It appears to me that the way this is worded, it's there's a bit of a heap in the first two clauses. And let me just state what our suggested revision would be. It would be striking out, so an amendment to the Colorado Constitution, and then strike out from concerning to in line 3, where it says therewith. In other words, it would read, an amendment to the Colorado Constitution prohibiting the state government from restricting the ability of local governments from enacting regulations. And in doing so, I think that it would serve the cause of brevity, in that the second clause is essentially restating the first.
We need a little time to think that through.
Of course.
So.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Dunn.
I think the proponent's correct that, I mean, in looking at the language of the measure, it's a prohibition on state government from enacting regulations prohibition on the state from enacting laws that prohibit local governments from enacting their own land use regulations related to new development. So I think he makes a good point. I think that point also applies to the very last clause as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I'm not sure the language he suggests is perfect, but I think the idea.
Mr. Dunn, you're referring to the language that says instead of spreading such costs?
Yes.
And I'm not quite sure why that clause at the end is there. It looked to me like the original language that was submitted to the legislative staff for review and comment included language that related to that. But that was stricken from the measure, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
there, I mean, at one point, and I'm just not sure I'm know which version I'm looking at, the amended text submitted to the Secretary of State, which indicates there was a, what I think was stricken, but there was in the middle of the measure language that said instead of socializing these costs to all of the taxpayers. And I'm assuming, but that was stricken from the final version that we have before us, right?
Or so, yeah.
And that last clause in the staff draft seems to refer to that, I believe. So I think it would make sense to drop that language that begins instead of. Is that correct? In other words, I just don't see anything in the measure that refers to spreading the cost among all taxpayers. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. So, going back to your suggestion, we are required to state a single subject for the measure, and that typically is signaled by concerning something, and then we state a subject. And the usual structure of the titles is that after we state the single subject, then we list the major features of the proposal using ing words. Now, on some very, very short titles where a measure simply does one thing, we have sometimes said, just along the lines of what you suggested, prohibiting or something like that. I'm just trying to think through whether if we drop the existing concerning language, whether or not there's any issue of stating a single subject, or whether or not, alternatively, we need to say an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning a prohibition on state government from. But, you know, as I think that through, I'm not sure we do, because I think that's all one, as I skim it, I think it's the staff draft is all one statement that begins, you know, of what the measure does, prohibiting the state government from doing something. And if that's the case, maybe your suggestion is just fine. I mean, I'm sort of going in circles here, but it's basic. The staff draft is simply saying that measure does one thing. It prohibits state government from doing, and then it sets it out.
I agree with that.
So this may be one of those examples where we don't have to say concerning something. We just say what the measure does.
And if you have prohibiting, you still have the ing rule.
Uh-huh.
Mr. Chairman, then, just to make sure that I'm following along here, then is the suggestion from the proponent and accord with your comments that the title would then read an amendment to the Colorado Constitution and then just jump down to line 3, prohibiting the state government until... And that would be, so there would be no in connection therewith.
Mm-hmm. That's my understanding.
Correct.
Let's go ahead and mark that just to make sure we're all on the same page. It says he's marked the first part, and while we're at it, I guess I'd suggest going down to the end of line 7 and inserting a period after systems and striking the remainder of that. And that's kind of where I think we are at this point. And... Do you have any problems with those changes, Mr. Deske?
I don't have any problems with those changes.
Okay. Before I go any further, I do have one other person signed up to testify. If we could hear from them and see what your view is of what we've done so far and what we need to do.
Ken Wonstone, representing Colorado Oil and Gas Association. I don't really have a view on what you've done so far. I have two questions about whether or not the title accurately reflects the intent of the measure and the wording of the measure. You'll note in the measure itself, says requires that new development pay for the cost that these developments incur. Whereas the title talks about the costs incurred by local governments. I'm not sure the title describes the language. I think clearly there was a drafting problem with the language. It was intended, obviously, to cover the costs incurred by local governments caused by or produced by development. It's not what the language says. So that's one point. I have a second point.
And I'm still trying to understand that point. So could you compare this again? I'm not quite sure I'm there yet.
Well, on the actual language that would amend the Constitution, on line 3, it says that new development must pay for the costs that these developments incur. Incur costs is a cost to, that says a cost to the development. I mean, it should read that these developments produce, create, impose on local governments, or it should read requiring that new development pay for costs incurred by the local government as a result of the development. I mean, it just doesn't match at all to the title. This language says you're recovering costs incurred by the development, not by the local government. The title is relating to costs incurred by the local government.
Mr. Garden?
The measure, as you've pointed out, says requiring any new development must pay for the cost that these developments incur.
That's a cost that comes to the development.
And the measure says on line 5, for the purpose of requiring that any new development pay for the costs of such development.
Cost to who? Cost to the development or cost to the local government?
Well, are you actually raising more of a question with the text of the measure versus the titles?
I'm suggesting the title doesn't accurately reflect the wording of the measure.
Yeah, I'm probably not following you.
Mr. Chairman, I think what he's saying, I think he's right that the measure itself is probably poorly worded in that phrase. Because it should say something effective, must pay for the cost that these developments, or must pay for the costs incurred by the local government as a result of these developments.
Correct.
But I also think that probably, I mean, when reading the measure as a whole, I think it's fairly clear what they're getting at, which is what's reflected in the title.
This is a constitutional measure. It seems to me the wording needs to be accurate, and the title does not reflect the wording of proposed constitutional language. Second point, while you're pondering that, is in general, unless you're a home rule government, you have no authority to enact or impose impact fees absent, for instance, the Land Use Control Enabling Act. So simply prohibiting state government from restricting the enactment of fees doesn't prevent it from simply not authorizing it in the first instance. Also confused as to exactly what is being accomplished, whether this title reflects in any way the impact of this enactment.
Can you walk through that again?
Well, most political subdivisions, unless you're a home rule government, have no inherent power to adopt an impact fee or an occupational privilege tax, which are the kinds of local fees that are sometimes imposed on business activity. So absent that legislative authorization to do it in the first instance, the notion of prohibiting the enactment is irrelevant without the government having provided the authority. So I don't know if this means that the legislature is forced to authorize such fees, or whether it is restricted from repealing existing fees. Again, it's just entirely unclear to me that this title relates to what is a very unclear constitutional provision here.
So the way I understand it, I'll just go over this again. Since non-home rule cities and counties would need statutory authority in order to require new development to pay for their cost to local government, and the General Assembly has not done that at this point, I think you're saying, the question arises under current law, is the absence of any such statutes authorizing it, is that a restriction on them that would be undone? In other words, would it force them to enact statutes allowing non-home rule local governments to permit the
A specific example that concerns my association, the Colorado Oil and Gas Association, is in 1997, the legislature prohibited the imposition of what was called occupational privilege taxes on the conduct of oil and gas business activity within local jurisdictions. I don't know if this is retroactive and that now has to be stricken from the statute, or does that stay in place? Pre-existing limitations on impact fees? The legislature simply repeal that portion of the Land Use Enabling Act, which grants statutory jurisdictions the power in the first instance to impose impact fees? That a prohibition on enactment to take away a power that they granted to begin with?
Well, and one of the things that this may relate to is as that comes before the board fairly often is that there are questions of legal interpretation for just about any measure, and the Supreme Court has told us that we should not try to make legal interpretations, and one or both of your points strikes me could be just legal interpretations that we can't make from the text of the measure, and I'm not sure we need to in order to set titles. If the titles accurately reflect what the measure says, then that may be sufficient. On the other hand, there is a competing principle here, is that we, the board, do need to understand the measure well enough to ensure that the titles that we do set are not misleading and that they do inform the voters.
I think in both of the instances I've raised as the wrong use of encourage, that it doesn't address the issue of there was no power here to begin with without positive in there from the legislature. I'm not sure this title is anything.
And let me understand a little bit, going back to your first point. I'm still trying to compare the titles and the measure itself, but it does strike me that the measure may not be as artfully drafted as it could be, but read as a whole, the development costs, I would think, would be cost incurred by local government. I mean, the measure doesn't say that it requires any new development to pay for the cost. It says the state shall not restrict the ability of local governments to enact regulations requiring any new development to pay for the cost. To the extent there's some question about what costs are we talking about, I don't know that local governments would enact regulations requiring developers to pay their own costs. And so, there's enough implication there that we're talking about the impacts to local government. And if that's true, and I'm trying to interpret the measure, I want to make sure that the titles accurately reflect that, and it seems like they're pretty close.
The question I have there, the way I would read that, if you read it to try and be consistent, would be only that portion of these listed costs in the second sentence, which are directly divided to and incurred by the development itself, and did not extend to putting a road in place frequently do, where the road is built for 10 years worth of traffic because of other development. First developer puts in the wide road but doesn't need that road. That's not a cost incurred by the developer.
Very
Mr. Carden?
Just to go back to the beginning, is it, I can't remember exactly what your suggestion was, but are you saying that the way it should read is, on lines 4 and 5, including the imposition of impact fees, for the purpose of requiring that any new development pay for the costs, instead of saying of such development, I'm sorry, pay for the costs of such development and then add incurred by local governments?
I don't think you could do that because that's not what the language of the constitutional wording says.
Right. The language of the measure says any new development must pay for the costs that these developments incur. The text of the title says requiring that any new development pay for the costs of such development.
Implying it's incurred by the local government.
Pardon me?
I think that implies it's costs incurred by the local government.
Okay.
As a result of the development.
Okay. So.
The title is not what the words say. Measure.
So it's not your suggestion that, notwithstanding the fact that that's what the measure implies, that that language be inserted in the text of the title?
I don't think it's the board's responsibility to cure a problem with defective wording in a measure that simply can't be reflected. If you're going to reflect what the measure says, it should say imposition of impact fees for development pay for costs incurred by the development. Doesn't make a lot of sense, but that's what this measure says.
So it's your suggestion that it say, and I think this would be consistent with the text of the measure, for the purpose of requiring that any new development pay for the costs incurred by the development?
That's what it says in the actual language that would go into the Colorado Constitution.
Thank you.
Mr. Detske, do you have any comments about these issues?
Yes. Well, first, I agree with the title board that it's not possible to address the merits of the proposed initiative, interpret their language, or suggest how they will be applied if adopted. So I just echo that for the record. As far as the first point, for the purpose of requiring that any new development pay for the costs of such development, I think it's my opinion that the language is sufficiently reflects the wording of the actual initiative, and that the subsequent clauses draw out the meaning of those words. But to the extent that you want to include language that mimics the wording of the proposed initiative, then we would ask that you add the language of within the boundaries of local governments. So it would be, and I'm just throwing this out, I guess, at this point, but pay for the costs of such development incurred would it be incurred by the local government within its boundaries?
I've been trying to work on some language, but I don't know. Mr. Cardin?
Mr. Chair, would it be leaping forward to perhaps suggest a revision that may be consistent with comments of the proponent and either testimony, or do you have a suggestion? I think that is it too soon to jump to that stage?
To jump to what? Sorry, what stage?
To go ahead and offer a revision.
Oh, sure. I think anything that gets us going. I think Mr. Dunn has been working on language. I've got some scribblings, but
I have one other suggestion.
Okay.
And that is to instead of such developments, as it reads now, pay for the cost of such development. We strike those three words and instead just literally take the language from the initiative, pay for the cost that these developments incur within the boundaries of local governments.
That's going to be my suggestion.
Maybe start with that, see what that looks like. So I think, yes, Cecily, I think where the cursor is, I believe what I heard was strike of such development. And then why don't you go ahead and say that again?
That these developments incur within the boundaries of local governments. Local governments.
Mr. Dunn.
My concern is that I think the opponents reading of the measure and the confusion in the language is correct. I know sometimes when we have found a measure itself to be somewhat ambiguous, our default position has been to just use that language in the title. But I think here it's pretty clear that the language of the measure is somewhat in error. Or let me rephrase that. Part of the measure, some of the language in the measure is in error in what the measure is trying to do. And I think when you read it in context, you understand what the measure can do, or at least I do. And I think we either have to say that the measure is vague and the title can't be set, or that we write a title that reflects what I would guess is a unanimous understanding of what the measure does. But I think by just putting in the same language, all we're doing is sort of perpetuating the confusion.
And I think that's a good point. However, I'm reluctant to, going back to Mr. Hobbs's point about interpretation of a measure, I'm a little reluctant as a title board member in my role as a title board member to speculate on how the proponents should have written the measure or what the proponents meant. And I'm not at the point where I think that the measure is one where the intent can be ascertained to the extent that the board can't set a title under the relevant decisions that are out there. And I guess that under the circumstances, this is one of those situations where it seems warranted to go ahead and track the language of the measure in the title. And not go beyond and try to impress or put the title board's imprint on what we think
the measure means. I think you're right. I think that it's pretty well understood that these are costs incurred, that these are the costs of the local governments. But I'm also think that this language that's in the title fairly infers that, and is consistent with the measure. And I wouldn't want personally to, given kind of the parameters we're under and the case, the decisions, to go beyond that. But I appreciate it's a tough call.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Chairman.
If I read this literally right here, I think it says that if a developer decides to build a house, he has to pay for the cost of that house. If he decides to put a road in, he has to pay for the cost of that road. If he decides to build a fire station, he has to pay for that fire station. Which obviously is not the intent. That's what I mean by I think we're perpetuating the ambiguity in the measure.
If I may comment.
Mr. Besky?
Well, first of all, I would echo the comments that tracking language I think is appropriate in that case. And I think that when you talk about that it's the imposition of impact fees, then you have I'm in agreement with you about the wording, but I think when you have impact fees preceding that language and below it the clause talking about expanded infrastructure, emergency services, parks and recreation facilities, local public school systems, I think that those are spelling out specific impacts that are contemplated by the statute and not necessarily what a developer builds, because neither the word nor developer nor build appear in the language of the initiative or in the title. And, you know, while I think, you know, reasonable people can disagree over what that might be interpreted to mean, I think within the context of what we're doing here today, that it fairly spells out what the particulars of the initiative are, which is what we're here to do.
Well, it seems to me there's two basic choices, and one is to take the approach that, as we have it on the screen, that reflects the language of the measure. I think that, let me just step aside here for a second and say, I don't think this is a situation where we don't have any idea what this means. I tend to agree with Mr. Detsky that read in context with what precedes and what follows, I think I have an idea of what it means, and I think the statements of the proponents, becoming part of the legislative history help us or guide us in that interpretation. And it sounds contradictory. On the one hand, we try to avoid legal interpretations, but here I think we're forced to make one. And I think what the proponents say they mean by this seems reasonable given the language, even if the language could be improved. So either seems to me that we use the approach that's on the screen now and let the reader make the same conclusions that we might be willing to make, is that read in context we know what that means, or we say that is misleading to refer to the cost that these developments incur, that misleads the reader, and we make an interpretation based on the stated intent of the proponents and try to inform the reader what it accurately means, or what we think it accurately means. And I, having said that, I'm fairly evenly split on which way we go. And it's either, like I say, it's either leave it the way it is or try to just come right out and say something more directly, that it's, and I'm not sure what that is, that these developments cause within the boundaries or are cause to local governments within their boundaries or something like that, or use the word impacts even. I'm not quite sure the best way to do it, but it strikes me that that's the choices that we have, is either leave it as is or state it more clearly than the measure states it itself.
But one point to that, and let's focus on the misleading aspect. I think that in the context of the title board hearing, misleading doesn't have to do with the interpretation, but misleading is rather, does the title of the ballot mislead the reader as to what's in the text of the initiative, not whether an interpretation of the text of the initiative could be misleading as to what the measure is trying to do. I'm not sure if I'm making myself really clear on that. That I agree, you know, the wording could have been a bit more artful, I agree, but I think that one thing this doesn't do is mislead the reader as to what's inside the text of the initiative, because at this point we've used almost the exact same language.
Well, that's probably where I am at this point. I mean, we can, if there is a motion for rehearing, we can come back and revisit this, but I can't say that what's on the board right now is clearly wrong. I'm not entirely satisfied with it either, but I'm also concerned about time, too. So.
Well, I'd go ahead and move the revision on lines 5 and 6.
I'll second that. Why don't you leave it marked up, if you don't mind?
Yeah.
What's that?
We already approved the other.
Yeah. I think the other changes were approved, I think, right? Okay. Is there any further discussion concerning the changes on lines 5 and 6? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
That motion carries 2-1. Any further suggested changes to the staff draft? If not, is there a motion to adopt the staff draft as amended?
Move to adopt the staff draft for proposed initiative 2005-2006, number 128, as amended.
I'll second that.
Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
That motion carries 2-1. That concludes action on number 128, and the time is 2:26 p.m. Thank you.
Just for that, I'll leave it. I'm just going to get mad and storm out.
Thank you. Tommy, thank you for leaving. Okay, let's resume. The time is 2:27 p.m., and now sitting on the title board as the designee of the Attorney General is Daniel D. Domenico, who is the Solicitor General. And I believe you'll be sitting for the remainder of the agenda items. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. The next agenda item is number 130, Natural Gas Energy Efficiency Programs. And 131, we might have some overlap. I think it's the same proponents, very similar measures. So perhaps we could hear from the proponents and maybe hear a little bit about the differences between them as well. Okay, go ahead.
Good afternoon. I'm Howard Geller. I'm the executive director of the Southwest Energy Efficiency Project, which is
submitted this measure along with Environment Colorado. The proponents of 130 and 131 withdrew 131 yesterday. From the Department of State.
I was not aware of that, so we will take that one off of our agenda. Thank you.
Time.
So then with respect to number 130, you know, I'll see if the board members have any questions, but is there anything that you need to tell us about the measure?
Just a quick overview. It's a measure to advance implementation of natural gas energy efficiency programs, cost-effective natural gas energy efficiency programs that would be implemented by the investor-owned natural gas distribution utilities in the state. The measure includes a minimum spending level if enough cost-effective programs can be found, and it directs the Public Utilities Commission to proceed with the rulemaking to develop the detailed rules guiding the implementation of these programs. It also provides for some reporting requirements and defines key related items such as what is cost-effective and what kinds of programs that we're talking about. So it's all pertaining to promoting natural gas energy efficiency programs by gas utilities in the state.
Are there questions for Mr. Geller? Mr. Carton?
I just have one very minor technical question. On the first page of the measure, in the amending clause, where it says Article 2 of the Colorado Revised Statutes, I think that it should read Article 2 of Title 40 of the Colorado Revised Statutes. And I think that might be a technical change within our purview, if you're amenable to that provision.
Yes. And again, the board does have authority to make technical corrections at the request of the proponent. So I think the request then would be to insert of Title 40 after Article 2. And again, the kinds of technical corrections we can make, I think, are the ones that are obvious on their face. And since the sections are numbered, you know, 40-2-126, et cetera, it is Title 40. I think it's pretty clear that is the correct title. So
I think that's correct.
So is there a motion then to make that correction?
Move to make that correction of the amending clause as discussed.
I'll second that.
So again, just for the record, in section, it would read Section 2, period, Article 2 of Title 40 of the Colorado Revised Statutes.
Yes.
Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. So again, are there any questions for Mr. Geller? Hearing none, let's turn to board consideration of whether the measure complies with the single subject requirement. I don't have anybody else signed up to testify. Is there anybody who wishes to testify on this measure? Any discussion by the board on single subject compliance?
I move that measure 2005-2006, number 130, meets the single subject requirements, that the board has jurisdiction to set a title, and that the board set a title for the measure.
I'll second that. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Then let's turn to the staff draft. Ms. Gomez will display it on the screen. Mr. Geller, have you had a chance to look at the staff draft, and do you have any comments?
Yes, I have four proposed changes to the staff draft.
Okay.
The first would be in line 3. Actually, there's two that are close to each other here.
I would suggest deleting the words develop and line 3 for the purpose of shortening it. It's implicit that they have to develop the programs in order to implement them. The key word is implement, in my view. And then I propose inserting cost effective after implement as a modifier of the energy efficiency and conservation programs. The fact that these programs have to be cost effective is called out in a number of places, and cost effective is defined in the initiative itself. And in my view, that's a critical part of what's being proposed in the measure.
Okay. Can I ask a question about that? Reading the text of the measure, I mean, I think that the staff draft was taken essentially from subsection 1, which doesn't use cost-effective to modify energy efficiency and conservation programs. And while I agree elsewhere cost-effective is discussed, it seems to me that subsection 1 is really where the mandate in the statute is. And I'm curious how you think cost-effective works. Why you think cost-effective modifies what they're really being mandated to do by this? You see what I'm asking?
Sure. I think the most important call out of what utilities are required to do is in Section 2, Energy Efficiency Program Implementation, Cost Recovery, and Reporting. Section 1 pertains to the utility rulemaking. On page 2, Section 2, Energy Efficiency Program Implementation, Cost Recovery, and Reporting, in the first sentence, in 6 months after the completion of the rulemaking, each investor-owned gas distribution utility shall develop and implement a set of cost-effective energy efficiency and conservation programs for its natural gas customers.
So you see sort of the first sentence of subsection 1 as kind of just a general statement of what's going to happen, and then the terms are filled in by either the rulemaking or subsection 2, and that's where the cost-effective requirement or modification is?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
And while we're on that line, let me just go back to the other suggestion about omitting or dropping the reference to develop and I guess I just wanted to understand that a little bit better. I mean, I'm wondering if that's to what extent you anticipate that the programs that are going to be implemented have already been developed, they just haven't been implemented, or are there strategies that have not yet even been developed? I'm trying to figure out to what importance should
right.
be attached to that word, that develop. Is there stuff that needs to be developed first?
I think in reality, the gas utilities in Colorado have not planned these programs yet. Some of them, particularly Xcel Energy, is implementing similar programs on the electricity side. They are implementing these kinds of conservation programs to promote more efficient use of electricity. And a lot of this proposal is intended to set up parallel programs, refers to the kind of cost recovery that's done on the electricity side. Other gas utilities and other jurisdictions are implementing these programs, so some of this will be calling up Questar Gas in Utah and other gas utilities, Southwest Gas Company, and asking them, what are you doing that's working, and transferring some of that. But they haven't done that yet.
So it's more of a question of simply implementing ideas or programs that are available, or it can be developed in the sense that they may need work before they can actually be implemented by a particular utility. But this isn't like inventing new technology or...
Right. No, it's not inventing new technology. And in fact, that sentence that I read that in response to the question of where is cost effective brought up, it points out that they have only 6 months after completion of the rulemaking to develop and implement the programs. They're not, you know, going to take 2 or 3 years to do this. It's a relatively short window of time for the planning and development.
Okay. And your other suggested changes?
On line 5, this is a minor one, in my view, and that would be to delete the word figures and then change target to targets. This seemed more straightforward. Ready for the next one?
Sure.
Okay. Line 7. Delete the 3 words through rate adjustments. The reason for this is that, in fact, the measure itself is clear that there is cost recovery allowed, but it's very specific that it's not through a rate case, and it's not technically a rate increase or decrease, but that a cost adjustment mechanism is used, and it's a separate charge on the utility bill outside of rates. That's how it's done on the electricity side. Top of page 2, at subparagraph 3, talks about this and directs the commission to establish this cost adjustment mechanism for gas programs modeled on what's done for electric programs.
I'm sorry, where was that again that you're referring to in the measure?
Page 2. One B three, Roman numeral 3.
Okay.
That whole paragraph.
Thank you. Questions?
And I have one more proposed change.
Okay.
Can I just
Mr. Carton.
So the way that I read the measure right now, on the change on line 7, you're suggesting striking through rate adjustments. Is that correct? And in subsection 3, it says procedures for allowing gas utilities recover their prudently incurred costs. And then going down a couple of lines to the next sentence, all such costs shall be recovered through a cost adjustment mechanism.
Right. I'm suggesting leaving in the words, allowing utilities recover their prudently incurred costs for such programs in the title.
But not giving an explanation of how those costs are covered.
Correct.
Or including that.
Okay, thanks.
Your next one?
The next one and final one is a suggestion to consider ending the title after the word measures in line 8, striking the language about submitting reports. It's true that the measure talks about reports need to be submitted, but in my view, that's not a key part of what's being called for here. It's a procedural matter that doesn't merit listing in the title. And of course, you'd put an and before the last clause if you did that. Line 7.
Any questions? Thank you. I'll turn to board discussion then of the title. See what the pleasure of the board is. My initial feeling is I think that the changes suggested by Mr. Geller are reasonable, and I, when in doubt, if the proponents want those changes to the titles, I think there's maybe some reason for going along with that. But I'd like to hear what the board members have to say.
I would agree with you, Mr. Chair, that all the proposed revisions I'm amenable to and seem reasonable in light of the text of the measure, except for the first one on line 3, striking the to develop and implement. If that language appears both in subsection 1 of the new 40-2-126 and in one B, I'm sorry, in subsection 2, where it says that within 6 months after the completion of the rulemaking required by section 1, each investor-owned gas distribution utility shall develop and implement. And as kind of the discussion went on, and Mr. Hobbs kind of talked out loud about whether or not there is going to be some development involved. It isn't as if this technology is on the shelf somewhere and it's just waiting to be implemented. I'm misleading may be too strong of a word not to include that, not to include the development along with the implementation in the title. But I think it's more of an accurate reflection of that particular portion of the measure to include both to develop and implement. And so I feel supportive of, but that one I would suggest we, in the staff draft, we leave in the to develop and language.
I agree. I don't think it's misleading either way, with it or without it, but I it's probably a closer reflection with it left in there.
Go ahead.
On the rest of the suggestions, I think my question about cost effective was answered, and I'm satisfied with that. And I agree that through rate adjustments should be deleted. I wonder whether we should replace it with a short description of the actual mechanism. And I'm not sure if there's a way to concisely do so, but I wonder if instead of through rate adjustments, if we said prudently incurred costs for such programs through a cost adjustment mechanism, I don't think we would need to add any more, but I'm looking at the language from basically line 10 on the second page of the measure itself. That may be unnecessary, but I just wonder if it would better explain the measure to give some idea of how these utilities would recover these costs.
Mr. Geller?
I thought about that, too. That's the obvious substitution that's more accurate. And it's occurred to me that that's just going to raise questions in people's minds. Does the average person know what a cost adjustment mechanism is?
I agree that it probably would have that effect, but maybe it should have that effect of forcing people to think about, well, what is a cost adjustment mechanism, and if that's a concern to them, then maybe they'll take a closer look at the measure, and if the language of the measure doesn't explain it, then they'll look at the Commission for Electricity demand side management programs and see if that's something that they support. So I think it may be a good thing to raise that to cause people to question that, because it's a question that they might want to know the answer to before they vote on this measure.
Okay.
And I'd be okay with just simply saying something like through a cost adjustment mechanism. That's initially I had the same reaction Mr. Geller did. I was reluctant to put something in that people won't understand, but I'm persuaded by Mr. Domenico's argument that is significant, and if people want to know more, they can look at the measure.
I'm happy with all the other suggested changes.
So I think Ceci has been trying to keep up with these suggestions. Are you there? You have them all? Mr. Geller, does it look okay to you? Not exactly what you propose.
That reflects what we've talked about.
I would move those revisions to the staff draft.
I'll second them.
It's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Is there a motion to adopt the staff draft as amended?
I'll move that we adopt the staff draft on proposed initiative 2005-2006 number 130 as amended.
Second.
Been moved and seconded. For the record, let me read then how the titles would read. And then just for the record, I want to state that those changes that we made to the title would also be made to the ballot title and submission clause. That is simply the same as the title except in the form of a question. So the title would read, an amendment to the Colorado Revised Statutes concerning natural gas energy efficient programs, in connection therewith, requiring investor-owned natural gas distribution utilities to develop and implement cost-effective energy efficiency and conservation programs for their customers, is that a comma? We're using commas, or that must be a semicolon. Or should be a semicolon, I assume. Okay, semicolon. I hope I know where I was. Directing the Colorado Public Utilities Commission to establish targets for expenditures on, and energy savings resulting from, such programs, semicolon. Allowing the utilities to recover their prudently incurred costs for such programs through a cost adjustment mechanism, semicolon. And providing additional financial incentives for the creation of cost-effective energy efficiency and conservation programs and measures. Mr. Geller.
Second cost-effective is hyphenated, and I would suggest the first one be as well.
Okay. I'll accept that as part of the motion to hyphenate in line 3, cost-effective. So the motion before the board is to adopt the titles as amended. Is there any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. That concludes action on number 130, and the time is 2:52 p.m.
Thank you very much.
Do we have anybody here who's proponents for number 125? We skipped over that agenda item. That was agenda item number 4. Anybody here for number 125? Okay, thank you.
If they show up, it's here. You can still do it. Okay, so you don't want to do it right now? Okay.
We'll keep laying 125 over.
I have everything.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm not sure. Yes, sir.
Is it your intent to simply 1.5 to the end of the agenda?
Yeah, that's actually what we're just talking about. Since we still don't have anybody here, I would rather lay it over until the end. I think the board does, since this is the last title board meeting, I think the board will have to act on it, but I'd rather give the proponents every opportunity to be present. Okay, let's resume. The next agenda item for the board is number 109, prohibition on legal status similar to marriage. For the record, the time is 2:57 p.m. And if we could start with a representative of the proponents. And I'm sorry, one other thing for the record. Now, as I indicated at the beginning of the meeting, now sitting on the title board as the designee of the Director of the Office of Legislative Legal Services is Sharon Eubanks, Deputy Director of the Office of Legislative Legal Services. Mr. Norton.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. I don't really have any comments at this point in time. We're here to answer any questions that the members of the board may have with respect to this proposed amendment. And we also have some suggestions on the proposed title as well.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Mr. Norton? Any questions about the proposal? Ms. Eubanks?
Mr. Norton, were there changes made between review and comment and filing with the title board in terms of the text of the measure?
At the review and comment hearing before the Office of Legislative Counsel, there were some technical issues raised which resulted in a couple of technical changes to the amendment that was submitted to the Secretary of State and therefore the title setting board. Both the versions submitted to the Legislative Council and the one slightly amended, technically amended, were submitted to Ms. Gomez and the Secretary of State's office for consideration today. So what is in the submittal from the Secretary by the board is what was modified from the review and comment hearing and submitted.
So you would say that all of the changes made were in direct response to questions
yes.
posed at review and comment?
Yes.
Okay, thank
yes.
you.
Yes.
Any other questions? If not, then let's turn to consideration of whether the measure complies with the single subject requirement of the Constitution. Mr. Norton, I'm sure you think it does.
Well, yes, Mr. Chairman, and frankly, that gets me to the proposed title. I think that the proposed amendment, quite simply, cutting to the chase, is concerns the prohibition of the creation or recognition by the state or any of its political subdivision of a legal status or relationship similar to that of marriage as defined in the Uniform Marriage Act, and specifically sections in the 2005 version of that act. That would be, frankly, our recommendation as a single subject. And I'd like also to make reference to, in that regard, Colorado Supreme Court case captioned in the matter of the title, ballot title and submission clause in summary for 1999-2000, number 227 and number 228, a case that is found at 3 Pacific 3rd 1 and decided on about April 10 of 2000, rehearing denied May 1 of 2000.
Any questions for Mr. Norton? Is there anybody who wishes to testify against the measure complying with the single subject requirement? If not, then I'll turn to board consideration of the single subject requirement or a motion. Ms. Eubanks?
I believe that 109 constitutes a single subject, and that I move that the board proceed to set a title on the measure.
I'll second it.
That's been moved and seconded. Any discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Then let's turn to the staff draft, and Ms. Gomez will display it on the screen. Mr. Norton, have you had a chance to look at the staff draft?
Yes, Your Honor.
Sorry. That's all right.
I did that once before.
That's okay.
If I may approach?
Yes.
I only have one copy of this redraft to the board. Quite honestly, as we were listening to the deliberations on prior proposals and the, I think, great seriousness and responsibility with which the board looks at these issues and issues regarding the simplicity of the title, the directness of the title, its need to be fair, not misleading, and not in any way deceptive, it occurred to us that the staff proposal was, we thought, certainly consistent with the language of the proposal, but contained far too many words and essentially repeated the language of the proposal more than was necessary. So I have submitted to the chair with a copy to Ms. Gomez of what we would recommend the language be amended to reflect, and it would be amended as follows. It would read an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning, and then from that point forward through the middle of line 3, following the words create or recognize, those would be deleted, and in lieu thereof would be inserted the following. And again, starting from the beginning, an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning the prohibition of the creation or recognition by the state and its political subdivisions of a legal status of any relationship similar to that of marriage as described in the Uniform Marriage Act in the 2005 version of the Colorado Revised Statutes. That, Mr. Chair and members of the board, we believe would be a simpler, more straightforward title and would clearly reflect the intention of the amendment and give the electors who choose to vote on this a clear idea of what it stands for. We would recommend, therefore, that those amendments be made to the title and be carried forward into the ballot title and submission clause.
Thank you. Let me suggest that we go ahead and put those, incorporate those changes so that we can see them on the screen. Then we can discuss it from there. Gomez, I don't know whether you need any help or whether you want to just read it from what's provided.
recognition or recognition.
So does that accurately reflect your suggestions?
Yes, it does,
Mr. Norton. Okay, discussion by the board. Ms. Eubanks?
Although I don't know that I'm necessarily adverse in general to Mr. Norton's suggestions, I'm a little concerned about how it's worded with the thought of, especially when it gets converted to the ballot title and submission clause, and presenting something to the voters that can be answered yes, no, that when you talk about, especially, shall there be an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning the prohibition of the creation of regulations, it seems a little awkward. And perhaps if we decide to go this direction, maybe that can be remedied by something along the lines of just, you know, amendment to the Colorado Constitution prohibiting the creation or recognition by the state. And
I believe that is a very good observation, and the proponents would concur with that modification.
Let's go ahead and incorporate that then. Prohibiting
creation.
The creation or recognition. Domenico?
I have one small thought. Should the conjunction between the state and its political subdivisions be an or rather than an and?
The proposed amendment, let me just be sure I'm correct when I say this, but as submitted, says neither the state nor any of its political subdivisions. So
I think it probably would be a bit more accurate. It's probably not misleading with and, but I'd recommend making that change.
Changing the and to an or?
Right.
Proponents would accept that.
Okay.
And then my other question is why we need to add the of any relationship language, which I don't think appears in the measure. Again, I'm not sure it's necessarily misleading with it in there, but I'm not sure why we're adding it.
We'd probably like to see the case of any relationship.
Probably prefer to take it out in light of your point, Mr. Domenico. But
I don't, as I say, I don't imagine that it makes it misleading. It just adds something that's not in the measure and could cause trouble for some reason we can't imagine here. And so I'd recommend taking it out. I don't know if I would insist on it, though.
Let's leave it out for now, at least.
Proponents would accept that.
Thank you. Ms. Eubanks?
And maybe it's just me. I don't know whether it might be read a little better if there was an of after political subdivisions. When you're talking about creation or recognition by the state or its political subdivisions of a legal status?
I actually think that might have been in my suggestion, but let me, I think that's probably correct, Ms. Eubanks.
Yes, you're correct. So, thank you.
Can I suggest that on this one, to address Ms. Eubanks' original concern, that we actually lay out the changes in the question clause just to make sure we're comfortable that it would actually read as a answerable yes or no question once we're satisfied with the changes above, instead of just assuming that it'll work. That might be a...
Maybe one way to do it, especially if you want to just turn off the changes... and it, well, I don't know whether this will be good enough, but then it'll be shall there be an amendment, and then lines 1 through 4 as they are reading right now. Question mark at the end.
I think he was suggesting perhaps making the changes down in the ballot and title language.
I think I'm comfortable with it. I just want to, I know you, that was your original concern, but I think I'm comfortable.
And I think that's a really good point. You know, if there's going to be confusion on the part of the person who has to answer yes or no, it really comes down to that question being clear.
So since I'm going to have to do this sooner or later, let me just read this into the record now, the changes. We haven't had any motions yet, but the title, as we currently have it, is an amendment to the Colorado Constitution prohibiting the creation or recognition by the state or its political subdivisions of a legal status similar to that of marriage, comma, as described in the, quote, Uniform Marriage Act, unquote, in the 2005 version of the Colorado Revised Statutes, period. And then the understanding is that the ballot title and submission clause would read the same, except in the form of a question.
Mr. Chair, just one thought to make sure is crystal clear, and that is that there are specific sections of the Uniform Marriage Act referred to in the proposed amendment. There are sections 101 through 104. There are additional sections in the Colorado Revised Statutes of the Colorado Marriage Act which are not referred to or incorporated in the amendment, and I want to just be really sure that the board is aware of that.
Thank you. I mean, would it be misleading as is? Do we need to say as described in specified sections of the Uniform Marriage Act?
I think that would be accurate, Mr. Chair.
Better to say, to add those words? Ms. Eubanks?
Mr. Kneiser was pointing out to me that Section 14-2-104 of the Colorado Revised Statutes makes a reference to a marriage. It's valid if it's licensed, solemnized, and registered as provided in this Part 1, so it includes, that specific section includes a reference to the entire Part 1, which I believe is the Act, and so by having just the name of the Act itself may be sufficient. I don't know that specific section numbers necessarily aids the understanding of the voters, per se.
Mr. Norton, any comments?
That would be acceptable. I mean, I don't want to make a big deal of that, but I just want to be sure that the board is aware of that issue.
Ms. Eubanks.
Oh, no. If you could, I was going to make a motion.
Yeah, actually.
Ready.
Well, is there anybody else present who wishes to testify? I just don't want to foreclose anybody. If not, then Ms. Eubanks.
I would move that the board adopt the staff draft as it has been amended for number 109.
I'll second the motion.
Any further discussion?
If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. And
that concludes action on number 109. The time is 3:14 p.m.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Board.
wanted me to make?
No, the other way?
Oh, okay.
No, not the other way.
Oh, okay. You think we should?
Okay, let's go to the next, actually two agenda items we might want to discuss together, number 118 and number 120, both ethics and government. I think they're the same proponents and similar measures, and so let's first hear from the proponents and find out. One of the things perhaps, Ms. Journey, you could address is the similarity and differences, if you would please. So if you'd introduce yourself to the record and tell
Absolutely.
Us what you have to say.
Thank you, members of the title board. My name is Martha Tierney. I'm with the law firm of Kelly Haglund, Garnsey & Kahn. It's a proposed initiative. Difference, the only difference between the two measures is that 120 does not contain the provision regarding so there's no confusion. It's subsection 4 of 118, which is titled Restrictions on Representation After Leaving Office. Other than that subsection, measures are identical.
Thank you. Questions, Ms. Eubanks?
Actually, I think I need to make a disclosure first.
Okay.
Ms. Tierney and her law firm are currently involved in litigation against the state and the General Assembly. That matter has no relevance in terms of the measures before the board today, but I just wanted to make that disclosure for the record.
Thank you. My recollection is Ms. Journey in the past has been involved in litigation involving the Secretary of State as well, but I don't think it's unrelated to this. So. Questions for Ms. Journey? Ms. Eubanks.
Ms. Journey, there were some changes made between the review and comment version and the version filed with the title board. Would you say in general that those changes were made in response to questions posed during review and comment?
I would. I think that we did make some changes, and they were all in response to suggestions proposed during.
Specifically, and I looked at the review and comment memo and sort of worked through that way. There was a couple of changes that I couldn't quite track, and I was wondering
okay.
if you could help
sure.
me. One, and I'm looking, right now we're looking at number 18. So this is page 4, at the bottom of subsection 1 of section 5, about the fact that the members of the commission receives no compensation. I saw a question relating to sort of the staffing of the commission, and I think some of the language in the preceding sentence may have been added in response to that question, but I didn't see anything about a question raised about compensation for the members of the commission?
We added that section as a result of those same comments, however, because we didn't want there to be any confusion about the General Assembly appropriating funds to pay the commission members. Because the question raised by in the review and comment period was, will there be any need for appropriations for this commission? And we discussed that at length, actually. and we agreed that there may be some administrative costs or costs of operation that may go along with this Ethics Commission, but we did not want there to be a suggestion that there should be appropriations for payment of the commissioners. And I can refer you to the specific question if you would like. Really arises out of question 27. A through C, actually A through D.
Okay. And then the other change I had a question on is on page 5 in subsection 3C. There was some language added about the commission conducting an investigation, where the review and comment version just said the commission shall hold a public hearing and render findings. I didn't see a question specifically asking about the commission conducting an investigation.
We discussed the mechanics of what the commission would need to do to hear a complaint. There was some suggestion that maybe that it was ambiguous as to what they were supposed to do when they received a complaint. So we added that language, although it's not in direct response to a question that I can recall. We did talk about what the jurisdiction and the duties of the commission would be during the
meeting. And then in terms of the another addition that's there again in subsection 3, I think it's paragraph E. And this, I think, may be a misspelling.
Yes, and that is one thing I did want to point out.
Okay, about the determines?
Yes, and ask for a technical correction there, if I may. And it exists in both 118 and 120.
The same, yeah.
It's section 5, sub 3, sub E, where determines needs an E in it before the last S. I apologize for that error.
Okay. Yeah, let me get that down again. And on page 5, subsection 3, B?
E. E.
E, okay. The last word there determines.
Second line of subsection E there.
And what, was there another instance of that?
It's the same change in the other version, which
is okay. Were there any other technical corrections that were involved?
There were not.
So maybe we ought to go ahead and dispose of that while we're on this point. We can make technical corrections. That's clearly a misspelling. In context, I think it's clear. So I'll just go ahead and move that the board allow technical correction in 3E on page 5 to correct the spelling of the word determines.
I second that.
Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Further questions for Ms. Tierney?
Single subject questions now?
Sure.
Okay.
Let's go ahead and move into single subject compliance questions. I don't have anyone else signed up to testify, by the way. Is there anybody else who wishes to address the board on this measure? On single subject or otherwise? Okay, then let's talk about single subject.
Ms. Tierney, in terms of Section 4, which is a restriction on representation after leaving office, could you just briefly explain to me, in terms of sort of the connection of sort of with government ethics, how that one fits in? It seems more easily for me to understand the gift ban or the commission, but if you could explain the connection there for me.
Well, we see the restriction on representation after leaving office as falling under ethics umbrella, certainly, and avoiding, as the purposes and findings section says, avoiding conduct that's in violation of the public trust or that creates a justifiable impression among members of the public that the trust is being violated. And the concern is that persons who would appear in front of their peers from an office that they just left would, there may be an appearance there that they are getting an advantage or they've obtained an advantage when they were in the office that they are now exploiting or could be perceived as exploiting. And so we cover that under the general topic of ethics and government.
Is there any possibility of it sort of going the other way in terms of whether or not part of the rationale behind that prohibition would also be when that person is in office that they're doing something sort of preferential treatment for whoever their prospective employer may be when they're coming out of office? You know, once, you know, sort of like to get a job, perhaps they're, I mean, is that also part of that perceived perception?
Yes, I think it can be.
Put that way?
That
okay.
way as well.
Okay. Thank you.
To jump ahead slightly to the titles, we are required in the titles to clearly express the single subject, and the staff draft expresses the single subject as the establishment of standards of ethical conduct by certain people, but the heart of it is the establishment of standards of ethical conduct. So. Is that a fair statement of what you believe the single subject to be?
It is a fair statement.
You know, and I sort of then am weighing everything in the measure, you know, against that expression of single subject, and it seems to me that it does. I'm okay with Section 4 based on what I can understand about the measure so far. I think that can be understood as relating to the establishment of standards of ethical conduct. I don't right off see a problem with single subject. Mr. Domenico.
Forgive me, as the new guy, I may not be quite as familiar with the standards we're dealing with here, but it seems to me that part of the goal of this single subject requirement is to allow voters to deal with issues one at a time rather than sort of omnibus measures that address all sorts of things at once. And obviously you can raise or lower the level of generality and fit almost everything into some single subject if you define it broadly enough. Can you help me understand where we should draw the line on how general a subject can be, or can it be as general as the proponents want it to be?
Well, I think the single subject requirement is designed to protect voters against fraud and surprise and to eliminate the practice of combining several unrelated subjects together for the purpose of enlisting support from advocates of all of those different subjects to pass a measure. Where the single subject is connected, or where the subjects are connected under a topic here such as ethics in government setting, as Mr. Hobbs stated, establishment of standards of ethical conduct in government, I think that there is not a risk of misleading voters as to what's coming before them in the single initiative.
Is the only question, though, whether it's misleading to voters? Isn't part of it also that voters shouldn't be required to vote yes or no on too many subjects at once, all in a one yes or no question. That if there are, if that someone should be able to say that they're generally in favor of improving ethics in government, but they don't want to set up put these additional prohibitions in Section 4. They think that's a bad idea, but they think that the gift ban is a terrific idea. Isn't part of the single subject not just to prevent fraud and misleading, but to allow voters to express their real will on individual issues? And so my question is, if we allow the single subject to be defined too broadly, don't we run the risk of undermining the purpose of the initiative process, which is to allow the voters to express their will on issues? Say, for example, this included, in addition, a pay increase or decrease, whichever way you think would improve ethics for government employees, and a revision in the way taxes are collected to pay for that. That could all be brought under the rubric of improving ethics in government, but it may not be a single subject. And I think there's case law saying that somewhere you cross a line if you define it too generally. And I wonder if this crosses that line a little bit.
Well, again, I think that you're right. There is a line, and could talk about where that line is. I think pay increases for various persons may bring us to that line. But I think that where the topics are connected, and here we're establishing ethical standards for persons in government or persons connected to government, that you don't cross that line, that you're still under the rubric of establishing ethical standards for people connected to government, and not, you know, raising salaries, lowering salaries, doing things that are off the map. In this case, I don't see that we have crossed that line.
Okay. I appreciate that. I think we're close to it, if not beyond it. I'm just struggling to figure out where to draw it. Thanks for your help, though.
Well, in thinking about that, I mean, I there's one thing that was, well, several things that I think we can refer to, but one of the things that I was just trying to refer to as a guide is the statutory provisions that were enacted at the time the single subject amendment was proposed by the General Assembly to the voters, and the companion statutory provisions do, in my mind, provide a little bit of help to try to figure out where that line is. And I'm looking in Section 1-40-106.5 that deals with the single subject requirement, and the General Assembly said that there were a couple of purposes of enacting a single subject requirement, and one of them, and I think each of these purposes actually provides, in my mind, a bit of a test. One purpose is to forbid the treatment of incongruous subjects in the same measure. So that is part A of one test. Do you have incongruous subjects, whatever that is? Goes on to say, especially the practice of putting together in one measure subjects having no necessary or proper connection for the purpose of enlisting in support of the measure the advocates of each measure and thus securing the enactment of measures that cannot be carried upon their own merits. I think that's log rolling. I think that's the phrase. But in any event, the idea of combining unrelated things in order to secure passage of some of things that couldn't pass on their own. And to me, that is one of the tests here. And I at least in this particular case, I haven't yet looked at this proposal as being an example of incongruous subjects in order to enlist support. But in thinking that through, then just going on to the next thing that the statute says that the purpose of the single subject amendment is also to prevent surreptitious measures and apprise the people of the subject of each measure by the title, that is to prevent surprise and fraud being practiced upon voters. But to me, in my mind, again, that's another test, is if we express the single subject a certain way, like establishment of standards of ethical conduct, would voters be surprised to find something else in there that seems unrelated? And again, if the single subject is standards of ethical conduct, then Section 4 doesn't really strike me as being, it seems to me that it is related. It's at least in the ballpark, and it doesn't strike me that that's fraud. That's a bit too strong, but it seems to me that that's okay, especially where we make sure in the titles that we do identify the major features of the proposal. So, again, I'm just thinking through in my own mind, and I think with respect to this proposal, I'm still okay with it as far as complying with the single subject requirement. Any other discussion by the board? Ms. Eubanks?
Well, I'll just put in my 2 cents worth. I found myself in the same place as Mr. Domenico in terms of trying to figure out where that line is. And I went back to the Supreme Court decision in petitions, the 1995 decision. And that particular initiative was found to contain a single, although general, subject relating to petitions, and it had numerous types of provisions dealing with time limitations, formatting and filing petitions, procedures for challenging ballot titles, rules regarding printing, distribution, prohibiting a limitation on peaceful petitioning on the public, a variety of things relating to petitions, and the court upheld that in terms of being a single subject, even though it was a very broad subject, in contrast to another initiative petition dealing with water, which it struck down because it was dealing with sort of election and boundary rules as well as sort of a public trust doctrine for water, that although you can have a very broad subject, you can have things within that are so unrelated that then they find more than one subject. But I think right now I'm comfortable in terms of going forward on this measure in terms of dealing with ethical standards.
Any other discussion? If not, is there a motion? Ms. Eubanks?
I would move that the board find that number 118 contains a single subject and that we proceed to set the title.
I'll second that motion. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no.
No.
That motion carries 2-1. Then let's turn to the staff draft, and Ms. Gomez will display it on the screen in the room. Ms. Journey, have you had an opportunity to look at the staff draft, and do you have any comments?
I have, Mr. Hubbs, and we have a couple of minor comments regarding the staff draft, although it does capture quite well what we're trying to do with Initiative 118. The first comment I have is on line 3 in relation to the word processes. As an alternative suggestion, I came up with the word activities. And the concern was that the word processes may not be as well understood or as well utilized in this sentence by when the voter is reading the title. That maybe governmental activities better captures what it is or better explains to the reader what it is we're trying to cover here.
Okay.
Do you want me to continue with all my comments, or do you want me to pause?
Let's talk about that one just briefly. I would like a little bit of discussion about the phrase that you're referring to. I was trying to puzzle out in my mind why that's worded the way it is. And I know the staff drafts are done very carefully and thoughtfully, and I'm sure the drafter had crafted this very carefully, and I can guess maybe one reason why it's worded the way it is, but it seems like it's kind of obtuse, referring to persons who are professionally involved with governmental something. And I might have missed the text, something in the text, a subtlety in the text that could explain why it's worded the way it is. Now, I think it applies to government officials and employees at probably state and local levels. And so one possibility would be just to say that it's standards of ethical conduct by governmental employees and officials or something like that. Now, if that's accurate, I suspect one reason why the drafter might not have wanted to do that is because this is the expression of the single subject, and wherever we put a conjunction in, it looks like it could be two different things. It's standards for this group and standards for that group. And so that could be the explanation, but I'm just wondering if there's something more to it. Mr. Domenico?
Well, I mean, this. I think the reason it's written so obtusely is because the subject is so very broad, I think, too broad to be a single subject. And in fact, I think the reason is specifically Section 4, which relates not to government officials, but former government officials.
Good point.
And so, I mean, I think that's why it was written that way, and which highlights the problems I was having earlier. But
that's what I
thought of when I read that.
Ms. Eubanks?
I think in addition to the point just raised by Mr. Domenico, is also in Section 3, Subsection 4, is a prohibition against professional lobbyists. So there's also, I think that was part of the difficulty of trying to come up with a term or describe the group of individuals that are involved by the scope or covered by the scope of this measure, because it's lobbyists, both, you know, government officials once they're out of office and maybe lobbying, but also in terms of current lobbyists, regardless of whether they were previously held public office. And so that's part of the difficulty.
Good point. Okay, I think I'm back on track in any event. So.
I think that those may be what the staff was concerned with. At least Ms. Eubanks' comment, the staff was concerned about, and concerned about that it's a, it's not a one-word person that is covered, and so they were looking for a way to most efficiently describe who is covered. I do think that we run into some problems if we start reciting that litany everywhere, and some of my other comments will go to that. That
okay.
We recite the same thing over and over a lot in the title, and just in terms of brevity, would hope that we could avoid that. But we're satisfied that terms, the phrase professionally involved with governmental activities does grasp at what we're getting at.
Okay, and then the other suggestions that you have?
Sure. In line 5, it states accepting or receiving certain monetary or in-kind gifts. And while accepting or receiving is the language in the Act, there's another, or in the initiative, proposed initiative, there's another term in there that is not listed here. That's soliciting. We thought maybe if we change the language to say soliciting or accepting certain monetary or in-kind gifts, it still keeps the measure same number of words rather than adding more. But accepting and or receiving are more similar than the word soliciting. I thought that soliciting should be included to capture that different activity that is covered.
Okay. I'm sorry, what was the proposal, to add the word soliciting or replace those with soliciting?
Why don't I read you what the proposal is, because I apologize if I would. I'll read starting on line 4 at the end. Or government employee from, and the new word would be soliciting or, and then leave accepting but delete or receiving certain monetary or in-kind gifts.
Okay.
The third comment I have is, again, for the goal of brevity and to try to limit repetitiveness, at lines 12 and 13, that we, instead of reciting the whole litany of persons again, we add a comma after the word complaints on line 12, and then delete the words filed against public officers, members of the General Assembly, local government officials, or government employees. So the next word would be to assess penalties and to issue advisory opinions.
Okay.
Next comment is on that very next line. Maybe it makes sense to just go right into it. After opinions, add a semicolon, delete on ethics issues, add an and before establishing. Then a period after public trust. Then our proposal is to delete the remainder of the title because, although I'm open to discussing this certainly, it seems like the remainder of the title is more ministerial functions, implementation functions that we don't generally see in a title.
Let me ask you about then one part of that. That would be deleted. Line 16 says, specifying that the measures shall not apply to home rule jurisdictions that have adopted laws covering or concerning matters covered by that by this measure. And the way I understood the measure, I think, was that a home rule jurisdiction could have weaker ethics laws, but that would prevail over this measure.
If a home rule city has, I'll get you the exact language, has adopted ethical provisions that are more stringent than any of the provisions contained in the article. I'm sorry, I'm combining those two sentences. You're correct that if a home rule city has adopted by charter, ordinance, or resolution a measure that addresses the matters covered by the article, then the home rule will prevail. And I was listening earlier to the hearings this morning, so I know this issue did come up. And I did rethink whether or not we needed to at least that reference to home rule in here. Mm-hmm. So certainly open to discussing that with you if you think.
Well, I would have some hesitation removing that, given that that might be a key feature. That it, I mean, if it deferred to home rule measures, home rule provisions that were more stringent, then I'd feel differently, I think. But the fact that home rule jurisdictions could have weaker measures might be something we need to mention. We can think about that. So those are your suggestions.
Those are our suggestions.
Any questions for Ms. Tierney? Thank you. And this discussion by the board. Ms. Eubanks?
In terms of the statement of the single subject, in addition to the issues that have already been raised by the board, I'm a little concerned about the current statement not being quite accurate, and that's in regard to where it says the establishment of standards of ethical conduct. And while I agree it's establishing standards in terms of the gift ban and the ability to lobby, those sorts of things, I'm not sure that the Ethics Commission really is the establishment of standards, especially since this, as I understand it, and maybe Ms. Tierney can correct me if I'm wrong, the Ethics Commission can be involved with enforcing ethical standards created by other constitutional or state law. It's not just those standards that are created in this measure.
That is correct. That is the intent.
So I'm not sure that the entire measure deals with the establishment of standards. Maybe it deals with standards of ethical conduct or maybe just ethical conduct, but I'm just not sure that establishment is accurate.
So that would be remedied by just simply removing the words "the establishment of"?
I think so.
Want to make that motion?
I so move.
I'll second that for discussion. Ms. Gomez will mark that so we can look at that. Ms. Tierney, that's okay with you? I think we'll drop the word "the" as well concerning standards of ethical conduct.
Yes.
Proponents would accept that revision.
Okay. Domenico?
I probably should have pointed out that I'm not entirely comfortable either with the commission being part of the same single subject, but I also think that standards isn't quite the right word even with that change. I mean, what's being done here is less establishing standards or doing something concerning them, but regulating conduct and overseeing it. The standards, I guess, that are being put in place here are the gift ban and the ban on lobbying after you leave, and the prohibitions on lobbyists. I just question whether what we're trying to do here is regulate conduct rather than just discuss standards of ethical conduct. Because it really is more about establishing a structure for regulating conduct than laying out standards, it seems to me. But again, it's difficult for me to state what this does because it seems like it's more than one thing.
Well, let me ask Mr. Domenico. I don't know if this will help. This won't go very far towards your concerns, but one of the things I at least want to bring up is removing the word "ethical" in line 2 and just refer to concerning standards of conduct. And one reason I bring that up, well, there's a couple probably, but my recollection, and I should have checked this before I brought this up, but my recollection was that the existing government ethics code, which is Title 24, Article 18, I think the unofficial caption of that is standards of conduct. I don't think it refers to ethical conduct. And in my mind, that may be sufficient, just that standards of conduct implies ethical type considerations without using that word, which might almost be, this is my second reason for bringing it up, a catchphrase or something that maybe an unnecessary word that might be unfairly gathering support for the measure. If we don't have to use it, maybe it's better to not use it. But again, it doesn't go very far to meet Mr. Domenico's issues, but there could be some question whether everything in the measure relates to ethical conduct, although my recollection is the state ethics code, the standards of conduct include a board, the provisions for advisory opinions, a board, as I recall, both advisory opinions by the Secretary of State and I think a board for both the executive branch and the General Assembly, as I recall. And as I recall, I think there's a sort of a timeout provision for government employees that I think it's 6 months that they're prohibited from accepting employment for a matter, and it's a little different from what this measure does, but for matters that they were involved in as government employees. I don't know for sure those things are ethical. You know, like that, for example, that maybe standards of conduct is a little better than judging those as ethical violations necessarily. So, kind of rambling, but I think maybe just taking the word ethical out there would be okay. Do you have any reaction to that, Ms. Attorney?
Well, I'm not in favor of that change because I don't think that, I think that it does lose then some of the description. But I agree with you that the CRS section at issue is titled Standards of Conduct, and the later parts of the measure reference that section by using those words to show that complaints could be brought under other standards of conduct that are already in legislation or the Constitution.
Well, I personally, I'd prefer to take the word out. Dealing on the part of the other board members?
Mr. Domenico. Just on a quick glance, I think, in case it helps to consider it, I think ethics, the word ethics or ethical appears in the title, and then not again, as far as I can see, until the creation of the ethics commission. So just in case that helps suggest how prominent the word should be in the title. But you're right, it doesn't solve my other problems.
Ms. Eubanks?
I think that your point's well taken in terms of especially the concern about a catchphrase. I think that the concept of standards of conduct accomplishes the purpose without running the risk of having something in there that, one, really doesn't appear much in the measure, other than what Mr. Domenico has already brought to our attention. And so I'm fine with taking that out. And whether we just say standards of conduct or go with the regulation of conduct, I'm fine either way.
Well, what would get closer to solving my issue is to say standards and regulation, but I know that raises other problems, but that's where I am.
I don't think we have a motion, but maybe for the sake of, maybe we'll take this the expression of the single subject separately. I guess I'll just go ahead and move that lines 1 and 2 be changed to read concerning standards of conduct by persons who are professionally involved with, et cetera.
Second that.
There is a second from Ms. Eubanks. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. Domenico, yes,
I'm an aye on that one.
Okay, that passes 3-0. And other suggested changes to the staff draft? Ms. Eubanks?
I'm fine with Ms. Tierney's suggestion there at the end of the single subject statement to change processes to activities. So I would so move.
I'll second that.
Further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. I'll I'll move another suggested change, I guess, that Ms. Tierney made. In line, what is now line 5, after from, insert soliciting or. And then striking or receiving. That's my motion. Is there a second?
Can I ask a question first?
Okay.
Ms. Tierney, in terms of the text of the measure, it actually uses all three terms. Is that correct?
It does.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I didn't want to.
No, go ahead.
Our thinking was that since accepting and receiving were much similar concepts and soliciting represented a different concept, that we should add soliciting just on the issue of brevity, take out or receiving.
I think your motion.
Okay. Any further discussion? Not all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Ms. Eubanks?
At the end of that phrase where we're talking about soliciting or accepting gifts, where it's talking about without lawful consideration for such gifts, and it would add words, but it seems a little awkward to me that it seems like lawful consideration is given for something. I don't know whether it reads a little strangely, not having, I don't know whether it's without lawful consideration being given in return for such gifts or just being given for such gifts, but I don't know, without just saying lawful consideration for such gifts.
You could take the receiving that we just took out and put it before lawful.
Well, but aren't
well,
but
no,
it's
that's
people
the wrong
giving,
subject.
Maybe,
yeah.
Without giving lawful consideration,
yeah, no, that's
for such
wrong.
Gifts? Because it's the person soliciting or accepting has given something in exchange
right.
for the gift.
Without giving.
But maybe you could say giving without giving lawful consideration for such gifts? Rather than being given? I mean, but prohibits the person from soliciting or accepting gifts without giving lawful consideration for such gifts? Or maybe it's not an issue if you don't think it's an issue. It just seemed a little awkward to me.
Would it just throw out an alternative? Can we drop it? Can drop the phrase without lawful consideration for such gifts? The idea being that a gift is something that does not have consideration. I'm assuming the word lawful is there because a bribe would be consideration. But so if you're going to have the phrase there at all, I assume lawful has to be included. But I just don't know whether the concept of consideration is necessary to the reader here.
Although it seemed essential in the text of the measure to specify that. Mm-hmm.
I agree that we were careful to include that in the measure to make it clear that you would accept things if you paid for them.
Mm-hmm.
So that it wasn't a ban on accepting things. Whether or not it's necessary to have that in the title, super strongly about.
When you pay for something, it's usually not a gift. You bought it.
Right.
So maybe, yeah, we could just drop the language that starts there on line 6 without lawful consideration for such gifts.
Try that. So, yeah, drop that last phrase without lawful consideration for such gifts.
Proponents would accept that change.
I would so move then.
I'll second that. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0.
I guess I'll start us on this issue of the whole laundry list of people. I'm not sure exactly what to do about it. I think it's somewhat important, and specifically down in the language that now, let's see. Starts at the end of line 14, where it's the phrase establishing penalties for a breach of public trust by a public officer, blah, 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 blah. Well, one of the problems I had with that phrase is it appears in the staff draft is it does nothing to recognize that there's also penalties imposed for people who are not in this laundry list of individuals for inducing the breach. So whether it's a lobbyist or someone else, that if they induce a public officer to breach the public trust, then there's also penalties. And so that causes me a problem in terms of just leaving it at establishes penalties for a breach of public trust, because it does more than that. But I do think that there is a distinction, because some of the provisions apply to lobbyists. The others don't. I mean, the way I understand it, the Ethics Commission does not apply to actions of lobbyists. Is that correct?
Well, the Ethics Commission can hear complaints the way it's drafted, brought under reporting requirements. So, arguably, if the person brought a complaint under the reporting requirements, the lobbyist didn't report.
Okay, so lobbyists would fall under the scope.
I think that's a very narrow piece of that, but possible.
But a lobbyist couldn't submit a written request for an advisory opinion. Maybe that's... Although in subsection 3A it says any person may file a written complaint with the Independent Ethics Commission asking whether a public officer, member of the General Assembly, local government official, or government employee has failed to comply with this article. It doesn't include lobbyists there.
I stand corrected. You're right.
Okay. So, like I said, I'll get a story on this, but I'm not sure how to resolve it. I mean, maybe in that context, if the scope of the Ethics Commission is dealing with sort of public officers and employees, maybe you could group it very broadly under a shortened terminology, because you don't have to worry about lobbyists. But I do have a problem in terms of that phrase I pointed out in terms of breach of public trust, because there's also penalties imposed for inducing a breach of public trust by any other person. Now, maybe you can drop that whole laundry list of individuals as long as we add something about inducing a breach, or inducing such a breach. I don't know, something. Am I helping anyone?
Well, that provision, right, doesn't relate to the Ethics Commission.
That's correct.
Maybe it would help to separate it, move it to somewhere. Because the way it reads, even though the staff was careful to use a semicolon there, when I first read it, I thought that was discussing something that the commission could do. And it took me a while to realize that's a separate one on our list of things, if not subjects, that this does. What if you moved? I mean, you could just say establishing penalties for breach of public trust or inducement of breach of public trust. But I think it maybe should be moved to before discussing the commission, just to clarify that that's a separate provision independent of the Ethics Commission.
And I wrestled with that as well, that the assessing penalties is provided in the measure. for the commission that the measure also separately establishes those penalties. And so I agree that maybe if we move that beforehand, it would make that clear.
Yeah, there may not be a better place to put it, but that might make it a little clearer. Of course, the Ethics Commission seems like a rather important provision to leave just at the end of this long, long list, but there's probably not a better place to put it either, given all the other important subjects that this discusses.
Well, is there a specific suggestion about moving it?
Well, I think if you moved establishing penalties for a breach of public trust to after the to what's on to after the semicolon that's now on line 11 before creating, that's what comes to mind. And then that doesn't solve Ms. Eubanks' problem, but about inducement, and I think the idea was we would then delete the remainder of that clause, the list of individuals. Line 11, at the there's creating, right, before creating.
No, we would need it.
Right. That's right.
And down in line 15, continuing to strike the remainder of that clause.
So then, to employee for now.
Yeah.
And then, Ms. Eubanks, would it satisfy your concern about inducement to just say establishing penalties for a breach or inducement of a breach of public trust?
I don't know whether it's better to have breach or inducement of breach up front or to talk about breach of public trust, because it's sort of the concept, and then refer to or inducement.
Of such a breach.
But yeah, something like that. I'm open to either way, whichever works best, but I'm fine with that.
Proponents would, for the latter, would say for a breach of public trust or inducement of such a breach.
That's fine.
You want to include that as part of your motion to move it? Or?
I will move that as well.
Okay. I'll second that. Of
inducement of such a breach?
Such a breach.
That was my motion, yeah.
With semicolon and?
It is.
Okay. Further discussion? Not all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. So what about in line 13, dropping the subjects of the ethics complaints? That was one of Ms. Tierney's suggestions, just refer to here ethics complaints and then drop the remainder of that.
It would pick up again at to assess penalties.
Where is that?
It's at the end of 14.
Okay. So, I mean, to me, it would be sufficient just to say creating a commission to hear ethics complaints. Semicolon. Any opposition to that?
Well, so you would also delete the part about assessing penalties and issuing advisory opinions?
No, actually, I would delete everything after the word complaints in line 13 up to the end of line 14 that says to assess. I would leave the to assess penalties.
I don't object to that.
I'll go ahead and make that motion then.
I'll second it.
And creating a 5-member independent ethics commission to hear ethics complaints, comma, to assess penalties, comma, and to issue advisory opinions on ethics issues. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Ms. Eubanks?
In terms of, I believe, perhaps was Ms. Tierney's last suggestion about removing the remainder of the language there that starts on line 17 through 20, while I'm fine with eliminating the language about preempting conflicting state statutes and authorizing enactment of legislation, I think that the home rule issue may be important, so I would be agreeable to remove the two latter phrases, but not the one.
I agree. And
if we keep that phrase, at least if we keep the home rule phrase, then I think we need to remove the and on line 12, because creating a 5-member ethics commission wouldn't be the last title.
Yeah.
Proponents don't object to that change.
Okay, thank you. So let's start in line 12, remove the and before creating, and then on line 17 before the word specifying, insert the word and then line 19 after measure, lead everything up to the period. I'll move that change.
Second.
Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Any further suggested changes to the staff draft?
None from proponents.
Perhaps we could see it without the markup, and I'll probably need to read it into the record. But is there a motion to adopt the staff draft as amended?
Can I read it first?
Yeah, I was going to read it to you.
Oh, okay, then go ahead.
While we're waiting for a motion and thinking about it, I'll at least get it into the record, since the record doesn't include the screen. Where we are at this point is an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning standards of conduct by persons who are professionally involved with governmental activities, comma, and comma, in connection therewith, comma, prohibiting a public officer, comma, member of the General Assembly, comma, local government official, comma, or government employee from soliciting or accepting certain monetary or in hyphen kind gifts, semicolon, prohibiting a professional lobbyist from giving anything of value to a public officer, comma, member of the General Assembly, comma, local government official, comma, government employee, comma, or such person, hyphen S, apostrophe S, immediate family member, semicolon, prohibiting a statewide elected office holder or member of the General Assembly from personally representing another person or entity for compensation before any other such office holder or member for a period of 2 years following departure from office, semicolon, establishing penalties for a breach of public trust or inducement of such a breach, semicolon, creating a 5-member independent ethics commission to hear ethics complaints, comma, to assess penalties, comma, and to issue advisory opinions on ethics issues, semicolon, and specifying that the measure shall not apply to home rule jurisdictions that have adopted laws concerning matters covered by the measure period, with the understanding that the same changes would be made in the ballot title and submission clause, beginning in what is now line 15. Ms. Eubanks.
I would move that the title board adopt the staff draft as amended.
I'll second that. Any further discussion? Not all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no.
No.
That motion carries 2-1. And that completes action on number 118. The time is 4:21 p.m. I want to take a break, but maybe we could do 120 fairly quickly. It's somewhere. So let's take up 120. I think Ms. Turney indicated before the only difference is section 4, I believe. Is that correct, Ms. Turney?
That is correct. The numbers are identical with the section of subsection 4, which is not contained.
We had a fair amount of discussion on this single subject compliance with respect to number 118. And I suppose I'll just observe, I think probably the comments that were made by everyone at that time would probably apply to 120, would not need to be repeated. But first item would be to decide whether or not the measure complies with the single subject requirement. Ms. Eubanks?
For the same reasons that were discussed on number 118, I believe that 120 contains a single subject and that the title board should move to set a title.
I'll second that. Any further discussion?
I'll just state for the record that we're getting closer, in my mind, to being on the right side of the line with this one. Still not entirely comfortable that especially the Ethics Commission seems like a separate issue to me in addition. So for that reason and similar that I already expressed, I think it's not a single subject.
Thank you. So all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no.
No.
That motion carries 2-1. Let's turn to Ms. Eubanks.
Before we get to the title, I believe that this measure also has the typographical error that would need to be corrected. I believe it's on page 5. It's in section 4, subsection 3E. And again, it's the misspelled word determines. There needs to be an E.
That is correct, and we do request a technical correction.
So, Ms. Eubanks, that you'll make that motion?
I move that we make that typographical correction.
I'll second that. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Rather than start with the staff draft, maybe we ought to start with what we just set for number 118. Does that make sense?
Sure.
So if we could take 118... I don't know whether we need to store it separately. I don't want to go too fast for Ms. Gomez to. I don't want to mess her up. She's got to make some sense out of what we do today later. So, but if you're, because we're going to end up making at least one change, I think, to this one.
Do you want me to just copy the final?
Sure, that'd be good. Thank you.
Good.
And I think there's at least one change we would need to make relating to the omission, the fact that 120 doesn't include section four and number 118. So would that be in? Where does that begin in this draft?
It starts with the word prohibiting.
Line 7?
It's on line 5.
Oh, 5, okay.
Right after the word gifts, you take out from prohibiting to. I'm sorry.
Line 7.
Line 7.
Okay. Yeah, thank you.
Because it doesn't have the.
Oh, was that the wrong
2-year? This measure doesn't have the 2-year.
Right. So it's the pro. Starts with the word prohibiting in line 7 and goes to the word office in line 10.
Delete one more semicolon. So would there be any reason to make any other changes? That's the only difference in the measures, I believe.
That is the only difference, and the proponents would not seek any other changes.
I don't know whether I need to ask this question, but let me ask the question about circulating both measures, because we've had this discussion that these measures are very similar. There may be potential confusion about similar titles. Do the proponents wish to state anything about circulating both measures?
We do, Mr. Hobbs. Thank you. We will not be circulating both measures. We will be making a decision here shortly about which measure we will proceed with. We will only proceed with one, either 118 or 120.
Thank you. Is there a motion to adopt, I don't know whether to call it the staff draft as amended. I guess it's the staff draft as amended, which is basically 118 with the one change that we just discussed.
Or do you think?
I think it's sufficient if I read what was omitted. It's the same title as number 118 with the omission of the following clause. Prohibiting a statewide elected office holder or member of the General Assembly from personally representing another person or entity for compensation before any other office holder or member for a period of 2 years following departure from office, semicolon. Is there a motion to adopt, Ms. Eubanks?
I would move that we adopt the staff draft as amended for number 120.
I'll second that. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
That motion carries 2-1. That completes action on number 120, and the time is 4:28 p.m. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Let's take about a 5-minute break or so.
Cruel, cruel, and unusual punishment.
Shows up and starts dissenting.
I mean, it's good questions, and second, it helps.